Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online is in for Jim Garrity today and for the rest of the week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, Jim and I think it was on Monday, decided to make the bad martini the fact that more Republicans didn't have the guts to say no to Donald Trump with this partnership he's got with CNN and this debate and just this spectacle that anything that Donald touches in a very public way always turns to. We actually gave props to John Huntsman for, I think, the very first time in the history of the Three Martini Lunch for staying away, Ron Paul as well. And now one of the people who actually has a chance to win, and I guess Ron Paul should not be excluded from that category, he's doing pretty well in Iowa, but Mitt Romney, a guy who is not necessarily known for taking a lot of tough stands, is definitely taking a stand here. Here's what he told Neil Cavuto about his decision on this particular debate coming up later this month.
No, I'm not participating in that. We have two debates in December that I've agreed to participate in. The rest of the month is going to be spent campaigning, doing the political work you've got to do to get the support of people in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Florida.
Dan, I think that's the political equivalent. I'm washing my hair that night. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, I think for one, this is evidence to me and incontrovertible evidence that National Review Online editorials work, because just a couple of days before he made the announcement, we urged him specifically to distance himself from this debate and not fall into Newt's trap. Gingrich participating in this debate, I think, was a shrewd move for him. He knows he does well in debates. He's trying to appeal to the grab bag of many constituencies within the GOP electorate that aren't enamored with Romney. One of those is probably that small and unfortunate segment of the GOP electorate who still believes that Donald Trump is a conservative. So Newt's trying to grab them made sense, and he was basically daring Romney to not debate him a week before the Iowa caucus in Iowa. And Romney, to his credit, didn't take up the bait. But I do think this is also probably part of – I don't think Romney was prevaricating when he said that he's going to be using his time over the next month largely to do retail politics in Iowa. That's a big narrative we're starting to hear, is that Romney's strategy of kind of sitting back, resting on his laurels is changing very quickly, and he's going to move swiftly to do a lot more retail politics and a lot more on the ground handshaking and baby holding in Iowa.
It's interesting. I don't know what your thoughts on this are, Dan, but the fact that Romney's not going to be there kind of limits the significance of this. So if it does turn into a spectacle and Gingrich is the main figure on the stage, I don't know if that will be a major factor. And the other thing in this is Donald Trump's making a big deal out of a potential endorsement here. The good news for Romney is that Donald Trump never holds grudges, never tries to get back at people for a perceived or real slight. So I'm sure this won't come back to haunt him at all.
I don't think it's much of a question actually at all that an endorsement from Donald Trump probably does more harm than good. And yeah, you're right. I think that the fact that Romney said no puts Gingrich on the spot a little bit. It's going to be, you know, Michelle Bachmann hasn't committed yet. So as far as we know right now, it could be Donald Trump, Rick Santorum, and Newt Gingrich in a room together. Now that's going to make for an interesting conversation.
Absolutely. It'll turn into a Lincoln-Douglas debate with Donald Trump involved. I'm not really sure how that works. But anyway, we'll get back to Newt Gingrich a little bit later in our conversation. But on to our bad martini. And if anyone saw really any parts of the president's speech in Kansas on Tuesday as he tried to channel Theodore Roosevelt from a 1910 speech and somehow trying to wed a nationalistic approach that Roosevelt talked about back then and, of course, his quasi, if not outright socialism now, the president going on a couple of different tacks. But basically, instead of making this a rousing effort to rally the country and unite the country, it was basically the worst of partisan politics here in the minds of many, Dan. And here's just a couple of clips. Here's the president once again building a straw man and trying to tear it down.
And their philosophy is simple. We are better off when everybody's left to fend for themselves and play by their own rules. I am here to say they are wrong. I'm here in Kansas to reaffirm my deep conviction that we're greater together than we are on our own. I believe that this country succeeds when everyone gets a fair shot, when everyone does their fair share. when everyone plays by the same rule.
And then he also went on to say, we won't play the clip, of that the rich are more than willing to pay a little bit more if it means that the deficit will be brought under control and so forth. Dan, he was almost right there at the beginning. Republicans and conservatives and the American founders, I think, definitely wanted people to basically either rise or fall on their own. Their own rules, I think, is something that he just kind of threw in there to make it sound better for his part of the argument. But there was an equality of opportunity that was behind the dream of this country, not an equality of outcome. And as Newt Gingrich said a little bit later, Obama's idea of equality is bringing everybody poorer, not helping the poorer people in America find a way to get a step up.
Yeah, I think that's a good way that Gingrich put it. And it's true. The most dangerous element of that speech, and particularly that part of it to me, is that the president seems to be suggesting that if you just try hard, you should be rewarded, or that we should mete out, I don't know, government assistance or helping hands based on effort. I think that's a dangerous precedent. And I agree with you. I was baffled by which Republican plank the president was talking about when he said we want everybody to play by their own rules. I'm not sure what that would refer to. But look, the difference between Teddy Roosevelt on the one hand, but also guys like Franklin Roosevelt and even Paul Ryan, the difference between mainstream conservative elected Republicans and President Obama is that a guy like Paul Ryan thinks that there's a place for a social safety net, that there's a place for a country as well off and free as ours to make sure that people aren't living in the most abject and base poverty, people who cannot help themselves, that the government steps in for those and fights for those people. The difference between a Paul Ryan and a mainstream Republican on these issues and President Obama is that he sees no stopping point. This is, to use a term of art, Fabianism, which is what they called, incremental socialism in the United Kingdom in the last century. President Obama sees every progressive liberal win as a step in the direction towards, well, who knows what, because there's no natural terminus. The state's never doing enough. There are never enough regulations. There are never enough transfer payments. There's never enough government control of industry. That's the real danger.
Hopefully, the Republican nominee is able to articulate that, because obviously Obama's making this a centerpiece of his campaign, and a well-structured deconstruction of that will be very, very effective. And I think you and I helped them out a little bit here. I think they can fill in the blanks a little bit as well. But back to Newt Gingrich for our crazy martini. And, it's just a few days ago, Dan, that Newt was very confident that he will be the nominee. He actually likes to put the emphasis on the first syllable. He's going to be the nominee. But apparently he didn't think that until very recently, because what we're seeing here is that Newt wasn't very prepared for getting ready for primaries, getting his name on the ballot down the line. In fact, he's going to miss the Ohio deadline. He's already missed the Missouri deadline. He barely scraped in under the wire in Tennessee and Oklahoma. And as the Washington Times reports, Mr. Gingrich also turned in a messy handwritten form for New Hampshire's first in the nation primary and filled in only 7 of the alternate delegate slots. So apparently there should have been more, but they usually don't get to the alternate, so it's not a big deal. But for a guy who seemingly has so much confidence, apparently until the last couple of weeks, he didn't really see himself as needing to do all this paperwork for all these states coming down the line.
The joke I've been making around the office is, wow, imagine how well Newt Gingrich would be doing in the polls if he were actually running a presidential campaign. because I think it's actually fairly clear, frankly, to use his favorite word, that early on he was not running a presidential campaign. He was running something of a publicity campaign. And I don't think that's a major knock on Gingrich in a sense, because frankly, that's what Ron Paul's been doing every 4 years. So I don't think that Gingrich thought that he had a real live shot. Maybe world historic Gingrich. Maybe his ego allowed him to believe from day one that through sheer force of will he could pull this thing out. But the fact of the matter is he wasn't staffing up. The staff he did have left him en masse, early on in the campaign. And he spent a week in Hawaii, that crucial early primary state, campaigning at the beginning of his campaign. So I think it's right that he probably didn't think he was going to be a competitor. And now he's playing catch up a little bit. Will this hurt him? I think there's a chance it could.
I think it definitely could in Iowa, where obviously organization and getting folks out to these lengthy caucuses. You hear about supposedly the great list that Ron Paul has, which could put him in a good position. Michelle Bachmann claims that she's in an organizational position to do very well. So the conventional wisdom anyway in Iowa is that if you're just kind of going in there haphazardly at this point in the game, you're probably in pretty rough shape. But who knows if there's enough momentum in his favor that could end up working out for him. But yeah, he's definitely playing catch up. And if he gets thumped in Iowa as a result of this, this could definitely change the landscape.
Right. And remember, Iowa's a caucus state, so polling isn't necessarily a perfect guide. You know, he's up big in polls in Iowa, but it's a matter of who can get caucus goers out. You know, people have to get up and go to these caucus meetings. That's why ground game is so important in Iowa. There's this counter narrative now that ground game is overrated and it's not necessarily as important because the media plays such a large role and galvanizes people and motivates them. But this will certainly be a test of that hypothesis.
I think it is, and I think Howard Dean would be a good testament to that. At this point, I guess 8 years ago now, he was considered to be a lock, and turns out he finished third, and we all know what happened after that. So, Dan, fun to watch. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.